Get ready for a journey into the heart of Bridgeport politics with In Absentia, a new podcast from Connecticut Public's investigative team, The Accountability Project. Learn about the city's past and present political dysfunction and the systems that enable it. Tune in wherever you get your podcasts.
Funding provided by Francisco L. Borges and the Melville Charitable Trust.
You're about to hear a favorite from the Faith Middleton Food Schmooze archive. This was our St. Patrick's Day show, recorded in March 2017.
I got that sunshine in my pocket, got that good soul in my feet. I feel that hot blood in my body when it drops.
It's great to have you joining the party on the Faith Middleton Food Schmooze, inviting you to eat, drink, and be merry with us. We are going to celebrate, get you ready anyway for St. Patrick's Day. We've got some outside-the-box ideas about St. Patrick's Day in addition to the classics. We have a beautiful gift wine that we found. We discovered a cheese that has come into Connecticut from Lithuania, and we want to tell you about it because it's an aged cheese and tastes a lot like an almost creamy grana padano. It's very interesting, and it's lactose free. And in our final segment, we have one of the great food writers and recipe creators out there, Melissa Clark of the New York Times, and her brand new cookbook. I'm with my treasured food buddies, Chris Prosperi, chef and co-owner of Metro Beast's restaurant in Simsbury, Connecticut, wine brokers Alex Province and Mark Raymond. So we're going to get to our wine tasting in just a little bit, this beautiful gift wine. But first, I think we need to start with, how do you get ready for St. Patrick's Day, if you do?
Buy beer.
People go.
Oh, wait, what?
People go out. People go out, basically.
People go out.
Yeah, and they have that whole thing, like traditional lobster roll. Some people say, I want the traditional
corn
thing.
Corned beef and cabbage.
Corned beef and cabbage.
Maybe
potatoes
some
and
boiled
carrots.
Potatoes
and carrots.
Okay.
Absolutely.
So we do that every year. Can we brainstorm about some things that you would do? Chris's hand is up.
I got one that I try to do every year, and I love it, and it's a little riff on the classic. It's still the perfect time for crock pots, and I love my 16 now crock pots, and I take the largest one I have. Corned beef is in every market this time of year. I buy two big chunks, and this is what I do a little differently. I cut them into cubes. About 1.5 to 2-inch cubes, right?
So, like chili meat.
Yeah,
stew
little
meat.
Stew meat, a little bit more than a bite size. And I throw it in my crock pot. And I throw it in there with the little spice pack that it comes
you
with,
use
right?
It.
Of course I use it. It has like coriander and mustard seed and whatever. And I throw that in there. And then I dump in a beer.
A Guinness?
Yeah, Guinness. It doesn't have to be. I use whatever I have. Nothing fancy. On low, I let it cook for about 6 hours. Then I throw in chopped up potatoes. Again, that same size. Chopped up carrots, and I let that go for a couple more hours, and then I finish it off with Brussels sprouts. I just cut them in half. So it's still corned beef and cabbage, but now it's more like a corned beef and cabbage stew. Right? And then, and I take it, I put it in a bowl, and then I love this sauce. I use it probably too much.
I just
use it 50% whole grain mustard, 50% sour cream. It could be any sour cream you have. Just mix it in a little bowl, and that's it. And if you
honey,
like a little sweet, you could do honey or maple syrup.
What am I remembering? Didn't you, one St. Patrick's Day, you brought in a horseradish sauce?
Yeah, that's the same thing. It's sour cream, horseradish, and black pepper. With this one, I really do like that mustardy.
Me too.
Yeah, that mustard sour cream and a little maple syrup or honey or whatever. Yep. Just mix it, taste it, and then spoon that right on top of these chunks. Put a little of the broth in the bowl, and it's almost like a soup stew kind of thing. It's something you can do at home. It's simple.
You can freeze it, I bet.
You can freeze it. It's just a little riff on the classic.
I'm wondering how it would be if we did the corned beef in a barbecue fashion.
Ooh.
On the grill?
Yeah. Or in
smoked?
It's in the oven.
Low and slow.
Yeah, low and slow in the oven with the way you would do barbecue ribs with the same kind of sauce.
Yeah.
You know, not too sweet, not too
like a rub
vinegary.
First.
Maybe it should have a rub.
Like they
but,
do beef brisket.
Real,
right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Real barbecue flavor. I would
cut the
good.
Cabbage in half and put it grill side
and
down.
I think I would like it as
charred.
A sandwich. You know,
sourdough bread.
I'm seeing like, you know, remember Lee White's Hanukkah brisket? I can see a similar thing in foil like she does. where she takes a roasting pan, lines it with foil like an envelope, like, you know, two pieces, one going each way. She puts the brisket in there. So you'd put the corned beef in there. You'd throw your potatoes, your carrots, your cabbage, put it all in that packet, pour in a little beer in your spice packet and just fold it all up. Or even go the old way with a little Coca-Cola, too, in there to make it sweet because the corned beef is salty. And then braise it like that. It would be heaven.
Oh,
then
yeah.
when you open up the packet, the aromas. And,
the caramelization.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So you could adapt
brown
that
sugar
recipe.
Brown would do the same
sure,
thing.
Sure, yeah, brown
just,
sugar.
Just the way we're going to hear Melissa Clark in a little while talking about a caramelized salmon.
Ooh. Oh, yeah.
And the secret is the brown sugar. And the flavor that comes to, that creates that caramelized sort of Vietnamese treatment of this brown sugar. If we treated the corned beef as if it's brisket and did a barbecue, brown sugar in there would
like
do
it.
That caramelization.
Sure.
You know,
a little chili sauce, a barbecue. Oh my God! Now you're taking it to a whole different area. I like it.
I'm just thinking out loud.
Here's a question though: why don't we eat it more than once a year? I love corned beef. Whenever
good.
I go to a restaurant, I see a Reuben on the menu. It's my go-to.
Because it's big though, and I always think of like just for Matt and I making a brisket. It's a lot of protein for two people. You know,
but
when
like
you go
you
to
said,
the, it's a big
it.
Yeah,
freeze
cut,
it.
Yeah. Cut sections up, freeze it.
Yeah.
Leftovers,
it's
would you freeze?
It's not very expensive, right?
Yeah, no.
No, it's not.
And
it's
it has amazing flavor.
It really does.
There's a good friend who makes a Chipotle brisket, and I'm wondering if you could do a Chipotle sauce for the corned beef.
Smoky,
in the
sweet,
cooker.
Hot.
I love
that'd
it.
Be, that'd be
I
kind
love
of
it.
Interesting.
Right? I would take a Chipotle sauce like that and just smother it with it, with some onions, and then put it in the slow cooker just like that, snap the lid on, and do it for 8 hours on low.
Chris,
and
I'm
just,
thinking of your Barolo.
Yeah, that
you
would,
know,
red
brisket
wine.
Brisket and Barolo in a slow
cooker.
Could
you do corned beef in that? Yeah, why not?
Oh, that's an interesting idea.
Yeah, well, you use a Nebbiolo, right?
Yeah,
you
get, yeah. So you're not spending the big bucks, right?
But that would be fun. I'm thinking I might cut a brisket in half and do half one way and half another way so you don't get tired.
And I think the supermarkets are catching on too. Like when I say I buy two pieces, I don't buy two whole briskets. Now you can get a 2 pound piece, you know, which and once it cooks down, it's the perfect amount for two or three people.
Are there a million chemicals in those spice packets?
No, the spice packet that comes with it is just spices. It's just,
dried
spices. It's mustard, coriander, some bay leaf, black pepper.
What
corn.
Is corned beef?
Corned beef is just cured brisket.
In salt water?
In a brine of salt, usually sodium nitrate that gives it that pink color. That's the same thing we use in ham. And then
is that okay for you, though?
You know, some people say yes, some people say no. I mean, we've been eating it for years. Even the ones that are no nitrate use celery because celery has natural sodium nitrate in it. So you can buy celery powder to do it. But it's still nitrate, right? So it actually just keeps that meat red like you would see. And I don't know, we've been eating ham for years. No one's ever said anything about that. Right?
It's ham.
Yeah, it's ham.
It's bacon.
Okay. All right. So the one thing I thought it would be kind of fun to add in here is doing something with the potatoes. All of our dishes are talking about throwing the potatoes into the slow cooker. But I'm going to make a play here for doing these potatoes this way. We have featured on the show as our most recent star home cook, Dr. Carolyn Missouri of Women's Health Research at Yale. I went home and made these and went so crazy over them. I then went out and bought 10 potatoes, and I decided I was going to make everyone I knew these stuffed potatoes. So here it is. Take a potato. You dip it in some salty water.
Okay.
For, you know, a minute. You've plucked holes all over the potato, as you usually do. Mm-hmm. Then you put it on a baking tray in the oven at 475 for about 45 minutes. Then you take it out of the oven.
I like that.
See where this is going.
You brush it with vegetable oil of some kind of your choice.
Yeah.
And now it goes back into the oven for another 20 minutes.
It's going to
get that crispy on the outside.
Salt's drying. The salt water's drying.
Uh-huh. And then you get that
leaving its crispy residue.
Then, while it's baking the second time, in a bowl you mix together soft goat cheese, chopped fresh basil, and lemon zest.
Ooh.
Yum.
Little salt and pepper. Mix it together, and then when the potato comes out after the second 20 minutes, slit it down the thing, and you just load that goat cheese into that potato.
Mm.
You're not done yet. After it's stuffed, then comes the drizzle of olive oil over everything.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. I forgot.
I paid special attention to
that. Why don't you just use butter instead of olive oil?
I forgot that. I did that. I put a little butter and a little olive oil.
Of course.
It is
who doesn't love the baked potato?
Insanely delicious.
I love the salt on the outside.
I would really suggest this.
That's
to
a
go
St. Patty.
With.
Yeah, of course, because potatoes
it's potato.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a meal. The whole thing is a meal all by itself. You
Absolutely.
Know, you really.
How about you could take your corned beef when it comes out and you can just sort of shred it up and put it on top of that potato.
Load of potato
goat cheese. Sure, because then you have a totally different take on it, right?
You got a full meal right there.
Totally. I like that. I like that a lot.
Well,
I love the baked potato. I miss it.
Oh, I do.
I miss it. Every
the skin is my favorite part.
Oh, yeah.
Every restaurant used to serve baked potatoes. I remember my first
job was
oh, my gosh, my first job when I was young was wrapping the potatoes in the foil and throwing them in the oven right before service so they were ready for dinner. And now you very rarely see baked potatoes on menus.
It's comfort food.
Stuffed
ones.
They're so good.
I order it every time I see it.
Of course.
So I take mine. The first thing I do is cut it in half, put a huge wad like of butter inside, close it back up, let it all melt, fluff it up. I mean, then
I love broccoli.
Sour cream.
I like broccoli, cheddar, and bacon.
Salt, pepper.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Roasted broccoli, crispy bacon, cheddar cheese, and then the sour cream.
Oh, yeah.
It's a whole meal.
Absolutely.
Yeah, sure it is. Okay, that's fun. This whole thing is flicking.
See, we've taken St. Patrick's Day to a different direction, I think.
Yeah, I think we did. I think we're into barbecue and slow cookers.
And potatoes.
And loaded potatoes.
It reminds me, in the northwest corner of Spain, and they're Gallegos, they're Celtic. I've been in these mountain villages where they will boil beef, boil potatoes, very simply. It goes on a plate, and then they just drizzle olive oil and paprika and salt, like smoked paprika. And it's so simple, but so delicious.
Yeah.
And it's that it's that beef that sort of falls apart with connective tissue, so it's stringy.
Right.
And then the olive oil,
that's
paprika,
good corned beef,
salt.
Too. That's totally
so good
corned beef.
So am I the only one who celebrates St. Patrick's Day by having one of those shamrock shakes? is that
yes,
no one else's tradition?
But I do green beer. Anyone else does green beer?
Oh, you got to have.
I got to have the green food coloring.
Hold on a minute.
Yeah, what's the shamrock shake?
I don't know anything
shake?
About the shamrock shake tradition. What is it?
Faith, the reason you don't know is because you have to get it through the McDonald's drive-thru.
Yeah.
That's why
you don't know.
And it's only this time of year.
And she has kids, so she would know.
My friend Kevin just put that on Facebook, the shamrock shake. So I asked him, what flavor is shamrock? And then Matt, of course, Googles how many calories. It's 800 calories in that shake.
But nobody answered the question. What flavor is it?
No one answered me.
Is it mint?
It is a mystery. Oh, yeah, it is mint. Yeah.
It is mint. Okay. Yeah.
I've never had one.
No
you're our representative.
I think we have to.
Robin, you're going to have to bring one in. Yeah.
I do sense like broken up pieces of Oreos might be good in that.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's like grasshopper.
Or the thin mints.
Yeah.
The Girl Scout
thin
mints.
Oh, yes, yeah.
We could make
now.
Our own, Robin. You don't
they're
have to go to McDonald's drive-thru to get that. We can make you one.
I know. They're all over the internet.
Right?
Yeah.
We could totally make you a shamrock
shake. The copycat shamrock shakes.
A vanilla shake with green food coloring.
We could possibly make you an adult one also.
Yeah. Creme de mint,
I like where you're going with this.
Oh, creme de mint. That's a good idea, Chris.
All right, we're going to make you a
real
one.
I'll bet you Anthony has made one.
I'm thinking about Irish whiskey for this shake.
Ooh, yeah. Kick it right up. And then a little drizzle of the Irish, the creme de mint on top. There we go.
And you'd rim it with broken Oreo cookies.
Yeah. Is there whipped cream?
There's definitely whipped cream.
We got to have whipped cream.
Green whipped cream. Green food coloring.
Oh, boy.
Green
whipped cream. You'd put the whiskey in the whipped cream.
Absolutely.
We have so many things to do. It's like, oh my God, this is a show. Stop talking to each other.
St. Patrick's Day is a food holiday. It deserves this.
Yes. And it is the food holiday that I sometimes skip.
I never skip it.
I love it.
It doesn't matter if you're Irish or not. You just have to be a food lover.
That's everyone's Irish on St. Patrick's
Day.
Right. Everybody.
You start getting that little accent going.
And corned beef and cabbage is one of the pleasures. Mm-hmm. It is. Yeah. It's just so simple. It's easy to do. Even if you just boil it on the stove.
How do you get the cabbage not to smell so skunky?
I think that's part of it.
Yeah.
But what maybe, you know, some people don't like the bitterness of eggplant. I don't mind it, so I don't drain it. I'm someone who thinks, you know, this is a little
Then
stunky.
I have a tip for you that comes from my friend Lou, who taught me this last summer, and he was roasting big sheets of cabbage. So he took the cabbage and he cut it into like 2-inch sheets. Can you see that top to bottom?
Yeah.
And then he drizzled it with olive oil and salt and pepper and then threw it in the oven, roasted it at 450 degrees until it got nice
and charred. So it's like a Brussels sprout.
So it's like a giant Brussels sprout.
Wow,
so that's
good idea. Good idea. Okay, two things. We have coming up cheese from Lithuania, which is now being sold in Connecticut. So we tried it and we're excited. We have a great gift wine for you. A little more pricey than we usually feature on the show. But when there's a good gift wine, we like to tell you about it. This is a French one, so it's a Burgundy. It's really quite beautiful. So we'll get to that. And don't forget Melissa Clark of the New York Times is joining us later on with her new book. And it's the kind of book where you just want to make every single thing in it. We've been eating some of the things from the book. Delicious. Okay. More mouthwatering conversation and fun ahead on the Faith Middleton Food Schmooze. I hope you will make a charitable contribution to Feed the Hungry. We're online now at foodschmooze.org, and we'll be right back.
I'm an Irishman, leathered, weathered Irish skin. Beard orange as the sunset of the flag. In the night sky we fly it in. Proud of the life we fight to live. History I write with it. Spit it with the dialect. And this is a celebration of
You're listening to a rebroadcast of the Faith Middleton Food Schmooze. This was our St. Patrick's Day show, recorded in March 2017.
Beans and cornbread. Beans and cornbread. Beans and cornbread.
Beans and cornbread had a fight. Beans knocked cornbread out of sight.
Beans.
Cornbread said, now that's all right.
Beans.
Meet me on the corner tomorrow night.
I'll be ready. I'll be ready tomorrow night.
Okay, we have a free podcast for you, meaning a copy of the show, and we'll send it to you. The whole idea is you don't need to miss a drop of pleasure. It arrives in your inbox. You just sign up for it once, and then it's right there, and you can listen whenever you want. To sign up for the podcast, go to our site, foodschmooze.org, and you'll see it right there. I'm with my treasured food buddies, Chris Prosperi, chef and co-owner of Metro Beast Restaurant in Simsbury, Connecticut, wine broker Alex Province of Hartford, and Mark Raymond, wine broker of Wethersfield. And Robin Doyen Aiken is our senior producer. Hey, everybody. This is let's get to the wine and the cheese. Okay, the gift wine. We have this on the site, foodschmooze.org. Picture of the label and information you need to say at your wine store. You can call ahead. And also, we want to remind you that wines that are featured on the show now carry the Food Schmooze Shelf Talker. So you'll see it in a lot of wine stores.
Absolutely.
And it says recommended by the Food Schmooze.
It does.
Because we thought this is an easier way for people to find it. Or if you just popped into your wine store and, you know, it's well after the show aired and you see the wine sitting there with our tag on it, people will say, oh, they liked it. Let me give it a try.
Absolutely.
I do the same thing. I walk walking around seeing who's saying what about what wine.
Now look for those shelf talkers.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. So this is a 2014 Burgundy, and I will tell you right off the bat about the price. Alex, what is it?
$32.
Yeah, so that's
not cheap.
No,
pricey. That's why we're saying a gift wine. If you want
to
bring
yourself.
In
special
a
special
gift,
but Burgundy is never cheap. Burgundy is very
This is cheap for a
Burgundy. You got it.
Yeah, I mean, very good price.
Burgundies
for Burgundy,
can be up to like $10,000 a bottle, right?
Absolutely.
With the Romani Conti.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So this comes from Burgundy. It's an appellation called Rully, Rully. And then it's a female winemaker, which to me, I think women are making some of the best wines in the world today. And she and her younger brother, Flavian, are the producers. It's organic as well. The grape is Pinot Noir. They produce such small production. I mean, that's part of the reason why these wines are expensive is because they don't make a lot.
Sure.
And if you're a Burgundy drinker for 32, you know, it's actually a bargain.
Yeah.
Happy birthday to me.
It doesn't mean you can afford it, you know, despite that it's a bargain in some world. But if you wanted to walk through the door sometime with a wine you really can feel proud of and that you're bringing in something that's real quality, this is it. Or if you have a practice of being exposed to new wines that are good wines and you have a friend you do that with, two or three of you can get together. And then it's $10 each, $10 or $11 each to get this wine and have a try. And you each have two glasses out of the bottle, which is a nice amount.
Yeah.
So that's the way, you know, I do it with my friends. We chip in.
If you think of it as like a buy the glass, if you go to a restaurant and spend $9 or $10 a glass, I mean, it's sort of the same. These guys have been making wine since 1313.
Well, I know.
That's crazy.
How do we describe it? Let's describe the wine. I taste berry in the background.
Berries. It's fermented in barrel, but it's neutral barrel. When you look at it, the first thing you're going to notice is it's clear looking. So Pinot Noir from Burgundy is like very light in color. You could read a newspaper through it.
Absolutely.
But then when you put your nose up to it, it explodes. It's like very, very intense aroma, and it smells like
bright
cherries,
berry fruit.
And berries.
And absolutely.
You're going to think it looks like watered down wine, but if you take a sip, all of a sudden it's just so rich and
it
intense and flavorful
on the palate.
It's some serious wine.
It is. It's got a little grip to it, too.
Yeah, that's
acidity.
But I love the bright berry fruit. For me, with Pinot Noir, when I know it's Pinot Noir, the raspberry character just comes to the forefront, and I get that right away.
This is a good time just to do a little education thing. Here's a bottle, and I know wine. It takes me a minute to figure out what in the world they're talking about on this bottle. I'm thinking, oh.
I agree. Especially when you get French, Italian. It's confusing.
This is French.
What's
I'm looking
the name?
At it, and it
what's
says, Vin de Bourgogne. Okay, I think, oh, yeah,
wine
Burgundy.
Wine of Burgundy.
Yeah, wine of Burgundy. So I think, okay, I've got that. 2014, the year.
Great
Fine,
year.
Good, okay. Then it says Domaine Nino, and then Rui.
So
and
what's the name of
says,
the wine
no,
and
wait
where
a
is
minute.
It from?
Yes. Then it says Appellation Rui Controle. Then it says Chaponnière. I'm thinking, now just a minute, I think the vineyard is Domaine Nino. Then I'm thinking, no, that's the name of the wine. Rui is the region.
Yep.
And then I thought, well, what's Chaponnière?
The French do not make it easy. They've made these labels forever. We
have
this conversation with these guys. Hey, you know, I don't think people even know the name of the wine. It's 100% Pinot Noir, and it doesn't say Pinot Noir
anywhere
on the label.
Bottle. Anywhere.
So unless you know red Burgundy is always Pinot Noir, you don't know it's Pinot Noir. They could sell so much more if they made the name easy, if they told you it was Pinot Noir.
Or just on the labels that came to the United States said Pinot Noir.
So Domaine Nino is?
If it says Domaine, it's an actual winery. And they grow their own grapes. So Domaine Nino, Nino is their last name.
House of Nino.
So Nino's just their family. Her name is Errol Nino and Flavian
down
Nino.
Down at the bottom, Chaponnière.
So this is where it gets tricky. Sometimes it'll say like Three Oaks, or oftentimes it's like a Ludi, like a named place, or just like a nickname for a winery or a vineyard. That oftentimes means something to the family, but nothing to the consumer. So in this case, it means nothing to the consumer. Rouilly means something.
Yes.
So that's in the Côte Chalonnais, just in Burgundy.
Beautiful place.
Beautiful place in the mountains and the hills. Côte is the hill. So it's not easy.
It really isn't.
Well, I just wanted to say, you're not supposed to remember all that. The point of this was, if you feel confused looking at these labels, you're not alone.
You're not alone.
I feel
so much better now.
This is where you need a good wine shop. So you go in and ask for help. You would ask help for televisions or computers or toaster ovens or if you're shopping for anything else. So don't be embarrassed to ask for help when you're shopping for wine.
Let me say something about asking for help. It can happen that you have a wine salesperson that you've asked for help who is well-intentioned but is pushing wine that he or she has been asked to push by the company. And so you get steered that way.
Right.
And then there's an upselling sometime where they're trying to switch you over to one that's another $10. A really great wine person in a store will have 1,000 customers come back if that person really plays it straight and said, look, let's figure out what category you want. Is this for food? Is this a gift? Mm-hmm. How much money do you want to spend? What is your taste? Really focused on you.
It's a relationship. So they may recommend a bottle of wine. You're supposed to try it, come back, and tell them you either liked it or didn't like it. If you didn't, you know, if you're trying a oaky Chardonnay, you can be like, I'm not sure how to describe it, but it was like too oaky. This person now knows you. It's like getting your hair cut by your, you know, a salon or something. It takes a couple times for them to figure stuff out and understand. And all of us don't have the same language when you're trying to even describe a wine to somebody. So they have to figure you out.
Absolutely.
This is why it's important to find a good wine shop. And if they don't treat you well the first time, you might not go back. So they're incentivized to build a customer base by being honest. Mm-hmm. You say, and you can say, I want to spend $10. I want to spend $15. They shouldn't be trying to sell you something that's $25. You know, there's plenty of wines in all those price points.
Yeah. And we always hope you won't be embarrassed to say, I really want to find a wine for a weeknight. It's 10. I don't want to spend more than $10. Don't be afraid to say anything like that.
But tell me you want something wholesome.
Wholesome,
not industrial, something wholesome that you would drink.
Yes,
no chemicals and junk.
Weird chemicals. Okay, thank you for finding that wine,
sure.
Alex. Really
delicious
terrific.
Wine. Yeah.
And it's on our site, foodschmooze.org, everything you need to know, including the picture of the label. Let's move on to the cheese. These cheeses are from Lithuania, and they are lactose-free, preservative-free, suitable for vegetarians. It's called Dzugas, I'm sure. People of Lithuanian descent, I am slaughtering this, but so let me spell it for you. Dziugas. And so we like the one with more age on it, meaning 36 months. And that was really pretty terrific.
It
was like a Grana Padano
with
a little bit
of
creaminess.
Yeah, it's like a really good aged Italian hard cheese, right? I really liked it.
So coming up in our next segment, I hope you won't go anywhere, because one of my favorite people in the food world, one of the most talented cookbook authors, recipe creators I know, Melissa Clark of the New York Times, is going to be our guest because she has this new cookbook called Dinner Changing the Game. The whole idea is to put together flavors that are a little bit outside the box, all of this doable on a weeknight, often on a sheet pan. There's a particular salmon I'm interested in that has this caramelized top. You're going to hear us talk all about that.
Oh. And chicken a million ways.
Yeah, and we had a couple of these dishes, and they were really good.
Really good.
Really good. So we'll tell you about those, too. Okay, so that's coming up in our next segment. We're going to spend the whole segment, Lucky Us, with Melissa Clark. And she has been very generous and allowed us to put the recipes right up on the site. foodschmooze.org. And I just think you might see some recipies there that are worth sharing with friends. So feel free to share.
Mm. A whole chicken.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just the most beautiful food to me, is a whole chicken.
Is it any better than whole chicken on a Friday night?
Oh my God.
You come home from a long work week. Oh,
my kids think it's fancy just because it's a whole chicken.
I like it because you have the carcass to make stock out of.
Absolutely.
Cook once, eat twice.
It's amazing to me how something grabs you, or your taste buds are just jonesing for that thing. Like for you,
Friday
you were
night
saying
chicken.
Friday mm-hmm. night chicken, yeah. And Robin's saying the same thing. It just has this kind of fancy, wholesome look. And
that
for me,
I'm
completely absorbed lately by fried egg on salad greens.
Oh,
wow.
Yeah.
Or I was at a place called Bruce's on the North Fork of Long Island, and they did avocado toast, the fried egg sitting on top of the toast and the avocado, and broad slices of Parmigiano-Reggiano cheese on top of that. Mm. And you're just meant to have your fork crash through everything. And then the yolk, which is perfectly done, just slightly
oozes.
Causes a,
I think my mom would say your body's craving those foods for a reason. You know, maybe you're trying to get nutrients or something in the salad.
Yeah. Yep.
I love egg and avocado together.
I'm taking salad and duck fat. Like wilty with the
What
egg.
I'm hearing is a kind of polar bear strategy where we're just backing on the bone. I think that's really what we're doing. Okay, so all this stuff is coming your way. I don't know, Chris, in the last minute before we go to Melissa, are you jonesing for anything?
No, because I'm a chef, and whenever I jones for something,
you get it.
I can make it, or I have one of my people make it. Yeah,
you
I'm
just say,
spoiled.
Would you make that for me?
Yeah, oh, totally. Or I order it, and it comes in the next day.
Oh, Mark.
Yeah, my cravings don't last very long.
We've been doing a lot of burgers lately, and doing the fried egg on the burger, I love.
Yeah. I have never had that.
Oh, my God.
It's so good.
I have that once a week, if not every other week, at a place in Torrington, and they do a great burger with a fried egg. It's just right.
The
egg's
just
a little extra.
With the greens.
Richness.
And then it's like the dressing on the lettuce and the tomato. Oh, my God.
Yeah. Hey, Faith, on Facebook, you posted a picture of a chicken and a turkey. They were like best friends.
They were cohabitating.
Listen, you have to check it out. Scroll back, because I'm driving down the road on the North Fork of Long Island, going past the Orient Service Station, where I get my gas and I know the guys. And I get right past there and I'm ready to turn in for gas and my head swivels around. I said to the gas guy, I said, are you seeing that across the street? He said, you mean the wild turkey and the chicken? I said,
like it was normal?
It's like I said, it's a wild turkey and a chicken hanging out? He said, oh, they're best friends. He said, they just spend all day and night together. He said, that's it. They're just family together.
It's a wild turkey?
It's a wild turkey.
Does a wild turkey go back to the woods?
And a chicken that lays eggs.
Yeah.
No. They all live together.
Oh, they do.
He's not wild anymore. He's been adopted.
Oh, that's so cute.
He's adopted.
Are they a couple?
I don't know.
We should find out.
Get asked.
We should send flowers.
It's the greatest thing. I snapped it, you know.
That was a great picture.
I snapped a picture of it as best I could, and I started sending it out to everyone I know. Love is love. Okay, Disney, just remember where you heard about this. All right, we love the local. Please support your local food growers and food makers for on-demand podcast delivery of this Food Schmooze Party every week. And to find all of our curated recommendations, go to foodschmooze.org. Melissa Clark of the New York Times is next. We'll be right back.
You're listening to a rebroadcast of the Faith Middleton Food Schmooze. This was our St. Patrick's Day show, recorded in March 2017.
Everybody knows she's a perfect 10, and I'm hanging on tight till the whole thing ends. 'Cause New York sky don't get much brighter. She sets the city on fire.
This is the Food Schmooze Party, offering the richness of life and coming to you in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and New York, including Westchester County, the East End of Long Island, and the Hamptons, of course. Podcasts and our curated recommendations are always online at foodschmooze.org. There is a person, if her name is attached to a recipe in the Times, I immediately, ahead of any world events, I immediately go to see what she has done. I love everything she does. And so here we have a new cookbook from Melissa Clark, and it's called Dinner Changing the Game. I think I should let you explain what you mean about that before we get into these recipes.
I think that even people who love to cook, having to cook dinner every single night can become a problem. You know, it's the number one thing that I hear about when I'm writing my column and I'm coming up with recipes. I just hear people want more dinner recipes. They want more ideas because I think they get stuck in ruts. And I know I do this too, you know, especially when I'm super busy. I'll go back to the same thing I've always made, you know, that thing that I do with the chicken or that thing that I like to make with the pasta. And that can get really boring and very repetitive. And people feel kind of overwhelmed by this idea. So what I wanted to do was come up with a strategy for people to break free of that and also to get out of that tyranny of just eating, you know, a protein and two sides. Because when we think about dinner, we still flash back to kind of mom's 1950s, Leave It to Beaver. And that's not the way that we eat out at restaurants. It's not the way that people really want to eat, I don't think, or at least not all the time. So in this book, I've taken those two ideas. Get out of your dinner rut and just make one delicious thing for dinner using as few pans as possible, as quickly as possible, with the most interesting flavor combinations. And don't worry about having to put together, you know, this like perfect little plate.
Isn't that good? It's everybody likes the sheet pan dinner. You know, I mean, it's the same. It's exactly the same philosophy. So I'm going to turn. We've got some recipes, thanks to Melissa Clark, up on our website. We'll tell you about those as we get to them. But the whole thing starts out with roast chicken. Who doesn't love a roast chicken? I don't know of anyone, frankly. She's got many, many ideas, but I want to turn to this one because this knocks me out. It's a caramelized lemon chicken. This is exactly the kind of thing that Melissa Clark does. That little twist, everybody says, did you see her recipe today? I mean, was that just unbelievable? Okay, so tell me about this recipe.
Yeah, we all use lemon with chicken. It's pretty classic, chicken with garlic and lemon, and it's delicious. But what I did in that recipe is I took the lemon slices and I caramelized them at high heat. I put them into the pan after the chicken had cooked part of the way through. I did it in a cast iron skillet, mm-hmm. although you could certainly do it in a pan as well. But when your pan is nice and hot, you throw these thin lemon slices in, and as they make contact with that hot pan and a little bit of chicken fat on the bottom of it, they caramelize and they turn golden brown, and the lemon intensifies, and it's also the sweetness comes out. It's not using an extra ingredient. It's not doing a special technique, but it's getting the most flavor out of the ingredients I'm using.
And then what do you do with those lemon pieces?
Those lemon pieces can become the sauce, basically, and you eat them. You know, that's, people think, oh, do I throw them out? No, you eat them.
They're sweet, they're crunchy. I see, isn't that the best? Because they're crunchy now, and they're just, you know, with a little salt in there. Oh, my God.
Fat, it's just delicious.
Fabulous. With the, yes, the fat juice from the chicken mixed up. Oh, that's the way to make a chicken. Now, we have this next one on our website, your chicken and grapes with a little bit of sherry vinegar. So we're talking about some fennel seeds and pepper and zest of a lemon, olive oil, a chicken you've split open. It's called being spatchcocked. Some red seedless grapes, sugar, sherry vinegar, and a little bit of butter. Not hard to do.
Not hard to do. Actually, that's a very wine-friendly dish. Doing poultry, so either chicken or duck or turkey with fruit is very classic. Same also with pork. And I like to use seedless grapes because they're such a surprise. You know, we think, oh, apples or maybe duck with orange or cherries, but grapes are not used that often, and they're really easy because they're seedless. You don't have to do much to them. You just give them a rinse. I don't even take them off the stem because you can do that while you're serving it. And you put them in the pan with the chicken, and as the chicken cooks, the grapes shrivel, and they get almost not quite raisiny, but they're almost a cross between a grape and a raisin, and then they get very sweet. So you need that sherry vinegar right at the end to bump up the acidity. It's a beautiful dish. It's a colorful dish, and it's a slightly unusual, just a twist, but it's not hard, and it's fast because that chicken is spatchcocked.
Yeah, and I always wonder why we don't use grapes more. It's the one thing that no matter where I am in this country and I walk into a grocery store, you might have trouble finding certain things, but grapes are absolutely everywhere, red seedless and green seedless, and you would think we would cook with them more, right? Like, especially in a dish like this.
Yeah, a pork roast would be fabulous, too.
Yep.
Okay, look at the picture of this with these on the stems.
Oh,
How can that not just dazzle you coming out of the oven? A big chicken roasted there with all these grapes on the stems surrounding it, and that comes to the table.
The next day, if there was any leftovers, I would take the grapes and make like a chicken salad. A little mayonnaise, grapes.
There you go.
I never thought of that. That's brilliant because, you know, chicken salad with grapes is a thing.
So I'm just going to say the names of some things in this section because we're going to move on to some other ideas. But there's the speedy roasted chicken with garlic, rosemary, and mustard. Everybody wants that recipe because of the way life is. A sweet garlic chicken with wilted chard. Garlic chili chicken breasts with cucumbers and green ginger sauce. So a nice, refreshing Asian twist there. Colombian style chicken with corn, avocado, and lime.
That's right up our alley.
Thai chicken breasts with coconut milk and lemongrass. Mustard chicken breasts with ginger and tangerine. As you hear me reading these, this sounds like fancy, but it's not. What Melissa's doing here is very simple techniques, and yet it's a little bit different. And these flavors together are amazing. I just think, Melissa, you have the best taste in what goes together. That's part of the secret.
Yeah, and I want to say one thing, too. It's usually when we do these books, I take one recipe from it. Faith sends me usually one or two, or Robin sends me one or two or three to choose from. And I take one recipe, and I do it, and we try it for lunch. And as I was making one recipe, I realized it was so easy and it's so fast, I actually made two. And that has never happened in all the years we've been doing cookbooks. I've never made two.
Oh, my gosh. That is exactly what I want to hear. That's the aim,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I always say, less is more. Yeah. Less work, more flavor.
Yeah.
So there's a blood orange chicken with scotch whiskey and olives.
Wow.
I thought, wow, that sounds so interesting. I'm just dying to try it.
Yeah, the smokiness of the scotch in that recipe really comes out. And the sweetness and the brightness from the orange, it's beautiful, too, because blood orange is so
You pretty. Won faith with the scotch.
Exactly.
The smile on her face.
But you won me with the za'atar chicken, because za'atar is one of my best things with lemon yogurt. I thought, yep, definitely making that. There's a pizza chicken with pancetta, mozzarella, and spicy tomatoes, a coconut curry chicken. Okay, Chris, why don't you talk about one of the dishes that you made of Melissa's that we just ate?
Oh, the black bean and roasted poblano quesadillas.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and that was so simple. Once I got the poblanos roasted, which only took a few minutes, it just went together, one, two, three.
Delicious.
You saute some onions, right, and add a little tomato paste, some garlic, some chili powder, black beans. I used canned because I was going fast, and I smashed them up. And then you spread that onto the corn tortilla that I brushed with a little olive oil, put a little cheese, some cilantro, and then the roasted poblanos I sliced, and the poblanos I roasted and I got in the market, they had a little heat to them too.
Oh my god, they were
good.
Just the right amount.
So that was like our appetizer.
Oh, so good.
You guys are getting a multi-course lunch today.
Oh, yeah.
Awesome.
Yes, we're very happy. I'm just going to mention that there is a jalapeno honey steak with cilantro and lime. Ooh. But I want to settle for a minute on this Cuban flank steak with lime and fresh mango. I love fresh mango. Mm. And with steak, never really thought about having those two together.
Sweet.
It was beautiful. And then that lime,
sour,
you know, zip in there with both the zest and the juice, with some orange zest and the juice of the orange. So this citrus thing going on, oregano, ground cumin, salt and pepper, flank steak, which is, you know, very easy to work with when you slice it up on the platter. So Cuban inspired, right?
Yeah, so that one is actually a dish my daughter loves particularly. She also likes the jalapeno honey steak because it's not that spicy. Just for both of those, I find that using citrus and especially lime with steak is just so good because the meat is so sweet and earthy and, you know, juicy and meaty, and then I just want something bright to set it off. So a little acid from the lemon juice, or you could use vinegar, a little sweetness from either mango or honey. You can see the formula of the way my mind works, but it all works really well together, and it all tastes extremely different. You know, the jalapeno adds a really, like, firm chili kick, and then on the mango dish, you've got the oregano, so you have that just earthy, herby flavor.
This is Melissa Clark of the New York Times, and her new cookbook is called Dinner, Changing the Game. And they will be fighting in this room over who gets to borrow this book first. Just to see what's going to happen. I went through this book last night in real depth, reading everything and looking at things and thinking, oh, it is rare that in a cookbook I want to make every single thing that's in it. And I had that feeling last night. Okay, peachy pork or veal with pomegranate molasses, the new spice, the new sauce that everybody loves now, with charred onion. So let's say pork chops or veal chops, some red onion sliced up, a little bit of oil and salt and pepper, peaches or nectarines that are cut in these thick wedges, the pomegranate molasses, which have the most unusual flavor, and some chopped fresh basil. How's it come together?
So that's another sheet pan dish, which I just love. I love throwing everything on a sheet pan, sticking it in the oven, and then it comes out and it's dinner. It's so easy. So that dish was actually, it was a little bit hard to get the timing just right because the pork or the veal, you want to use nice thick chops, and you can use either one. They need a little more time to cook than, you know, you don't want to overcook your peaches. So you layer things onto the sheet pan in succession, and then it works beautifully. And what happens is that the onions, they don't turn totally caramelized. They just char and brown, but they stay, they retain a little bit of texture, which is nice. So they're not completely floppy. So you have a slight crunch, and then the peaches, you have the juicy sweetness, And then, of course, your lovely roasted charred meat is always, always good. And then, you know, pomegranate molasses, that is the it sauce right now, the it condiment. I keep it on hand at all time. You buy one bottle, and it lasts forever in the pantry.
I don't even know how to describe that flavor.
It's tangy.
Yeah.
Sweety,
tannicky,
bittery,
a little.
Yeah, that's bitter.
Got a little,
it's unlike anything.
And at first, I thought, this is going to be weird when someone pulled it out to put it on something, and I tasted it and I went crazy. I thought, oh, here we go. This is that Middle Eastern thing that makes me want to move there.
And a couple bucks for a bottle, and it lasts forever.
Yeah.
It's a good investment.
Yep.
So this is your recipe for cumin chicken meatballs with the green chili sauce. This sounds so good to me. I love cumin.
Oh, yeah.
And I think, what a great flavoring. So
it smells good when you're cooking with it.
You're mixing up your meatballs with white bread and milk and cumin seeds and red chili flakes and ground cumin in addition to the seeds and ground chicken, egg to hold everything together and garlic and lemon zest and Worcestershire sauce.
Ooh.
And then there's this sauce of jalapenos, parsley, cilantro, garlic, extra virgin olive oil, lemon juice. So imagine these chicken meatballs with this sauce, this green chili sauce. That just sounds so incredible to me.
You know what I like, too, is that she uses spices in every recipe, and it keeps your spice cabinet fresh. I tell people that all the time. Yeah. You know, you buy a little cumin, and it sits there for 3.5 years, unless, like, Melissa, you use it all the time.
We use it, right.
Yeah, put it in things and experiment. And this book is a perfect example of really getting use of your spice cabinet.
That is such a good point. And I would tell everybody who is listening that if you indeed have 3.5-year-old cumin, throw it out and buy some new cumin.
So we like to give our tip for spices, and you might even have a better idea for us, Melissa, but we don't want people to have to spend $40, $50 on spices alone in a recipe. So we say, do what we do. We go to a health food market that has them in bins, and they're going cycling through them very fast, and so you just have to lift up the lid to smell how fresh they are. They haven't been sitting in a warehouse all this time. You can buy a little bag or a larger bag. It's pennies on the dollars. They'll say to me at the register, okay, 50 cents instead of $6.50.
Here's coins to pay for it.
Yeah,
true. It's like you buy that little itty-bitty bag of paprika, and when you buy fresh, sweet paprika, it actually really tastes good.
Yeah.
It's like 30 cents. Oh,
isn't that fabulous? Honestly. So I always get double what I need so that I have stuff for the next recipe. And then I go back so I don't have to go quite so often. I am a big fan of Thai lettuce wraps.
Oh, yeah.
Which is like a ground pork with all these beautiful things inside. And, oh, it's so, so good. I can't wait. When you get this book, people, I hope you do, because it's just so fantastic. I want to get to a couple more that we have on the site. We've got your green beans with caper vinaigrette. I'm not going to go into that one because I want to use our last minute here doing your Vietnamese caramel salmon. Okay, so coconut or extra virgin olive oil, light brown sugar, Asian fish sauce, soy sauce, fresh ginger, zest of a lime, the juice of a lime, sliced scallions, sliced jalapeno, and cilantro for garnish. So tell me how the caramelization comes in.
It's such an easy recipe. You know, people think, oh my gosh, making caramel is so scary, but you don't have to do that here because you're using brown sugar, basically, which caramelizes in the heat of the pan. And because it's brown sugar, it has a great flavor anyway. You know, it already has that molasses.
Yeah.
And then the spices and the lime just kind of temper it. Oh. It's so good on salmon. It's actually a riff on a classic Vietnamese bluefish recipe.
Oh.
But I feel that people are a little bit maybe leery of bluefish, so I adapted it to salmon because who doesn't need another salmon recipe, right?
Right.
And it works beautifully.
Oh, this is so...
Sounds delicious.
I know.
You know when you're tired and cranky and you can't figure out what to have for dinner?
Yeah.
Every single one of these makes me hungry.
this weekend, this is going to be my dish, this Vietnamese caramel salmon.
Oh, good, good.
Yeah. And I just want to know, your daughter eats most of these things?
She's, oh, God, no.
No.
She eats a lot of them, but she will not touch fish.
Okay.
And
chicken of the sea.
Yes,
right.
We call it chicken of the sea for the kids.
Exactly. Yeah, she's on to me. She doesn't like certain things with too much sauce. But, you know, she's 8. She's changing.
Sure.
And, you know, my mother says, until I was 12, I didn't eat fish. Now, I have no memory of this, but this is what she says. So, you know, she's got time. She's got time. And when she loves something, she loves it. She's a big salad eater. Will eat all the salads, loves steak, loves chicken, you know, all the pasta dishes like a kid.
Mm, good for her.
So there's a lot of kid-friendly stuff in the book because I was definitely feeding my family while I was writing it.
Yeah, I saw it from the pictures. I thought, oh, this is beyond photoshopping. This is real. There's green beans, as I mentioned, with a caper vinaigrette, which is, I think, a wonderful way to treat green beans.
Yeah.
Because green beans need some help.
And make them interesting.
That's 1,000 recipes in here I didn't get to, and I'm so sorry I can't, because it's just the best kind of food pornography, if you ask me. The recipes that we really focused on are at our website, foodschmooze.org. Her book, Melissa Clark of the New York Times, is called Dinner Changing the Game. Thank you so much for being back on the show.
Oh, thank you for having me.
You're the best.
Thank you.
Okay. In New Haven, I'm Faith Middleton.